What if I told you that every time you felt guilty about spending hours on a game, you were actually doing exactly what your brain was designed to do? That the satisfaction of finally beating that impossible level isn't just entertainment. It's the same neurochemical reward your ancestors got from learning to hunt or avoid predators. Games aren't just mindless diversions. They're sophisticated learning machines that hijack one of our brain's most fundamental drives, the hunger for patterns. This insight forms the foundation of Raf Koster's revolutionary work, which has become essential reading not just for game designers, but for educators, psychologists, and anyone curious about what makes us tick. When Will Wright, creator of SimCity and The Sims, calls someone a courageous explorer and a diligent mapmaker of ideas, you know you're dealing with something special. And what Koster mapped is nothing less than the architecture of human enjoyment itself. Your brain doesn't see reality, it predicts it. Right now, your visual system is filling in a blind spot the size of your thumb held at arm's length. You never notice because your brain seamlessly invents what should be there based on surrounding patterns. This isn't a bug, it's a survival feature. We're pattern recognition machines constantly building mental models. A baby's peekaboo giggle is the sound of a brain successfully predicting and confirming a pattern. As we grow, we master increasingly complex patterns, each building on our expanding mental library. This chunking, packaging complex activities into automatic routines, lets you drive while conversing or walk without thinking. Games exploit this beautifully. They're concentrated pattern learning stripped of real-world complications. Chess teaches resource management and strategic thinking in their purest form. This explains why games eventually bore us. Once you've extracted all the patterns, once you've solved tic-tac-toe, your brain stops rewarding you. The most enduring games incorporate elements like human psychology or physics, ensuring there's always another pattern to discover. Fun isn't mysterious, it's feedback. Your brain rewards learning with dopamine and endorphins, explaining why just one more turn stretches into hours. That rush from nailing a combo or solving a puzzle, that's your neural reward system celebrating successful pattern recognition. This system evolved because learning kept our ancestors alive. Your brain can't distinguish between important and trivial learning. Mastering a game mechanic triggers the same pleasure response as tracking prey once did. This explains the Goldilocks zone of difficulty. Too easy offers no challenge. Too hard prevents learning. The sweet spot, what psychologist Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi calls flow, occurs when challenges perfectly match skill level, creating constant small victories. Boredom strikes when games fail to unfold new patterns, when players immediately grasp everything, recognize depth but find it uninteresting, perceive no patterns, or master everything available. Great games teach everything they offer before you stop playing. This reframes games entirely. They're sophisticated teaching tools tapping into natural learning mechanisms. The question becomes, what should they be teaching? Even abstract games teach us about reality. Chess models mathematical truths and strategic principles that apply everywhere. Most games prepare us for calculating odds, predicting events, and making optimal decisions, fundamental life skills dressed as play. Traditional games simulate combat or competitive building, teaching power dynamics and spatial reasoning. We learn to examine environments, interpret symbols, assess distance and risk, and map relationships to predict behaviors. Memory games train recall, while chance games teach probability assessment. Games evolve with societies. Network-building games emerged as civilizations developed complex infrastructure. Chess pieces like queens gained power over time, reflecting changing social structures. Farming games transformed from Mancala's literal seed sowing to modern business simulations, teaching nothing about actual agriculture. Yet most games still revolve around core survival activities: resource allocation, force projection, territory control. This raises a crucial question: are games teaching skills we actually need today? Children's games remain unchanged because basic developmental needs persist, but adult games should evolve to teach more relevant modern skills. Despite technological advances, most merely improve simulation fidelity rather than teaching new challenges. They often reinforce problematic tribal instincts like xenophobia when our interconnected world desperately needs games teaching global economic understanding and cross-cultural empathy. Games excel at active verbs, controlling, projecting, matching, remembering, and quantification. Portal teaches physics through direct interaction. SimCity provides intuitive urban planning understanding through resource management and spatial relationships. Games aren't inherently limited. Designers simply haven't fully explored their potential. As compound media, incorporating systems, stories, art, and music, games like Journey combine minimalist mechanics with evocative visuals to create profound emotional experiences no single medium achieves alone. Games and stories reveal complementary natures. Games teach experientially. Stories teach vicariously. All Quiet on the Western Front creates emotional understanding of war, while This War of Mine teaches through experiencing difficult choices directly. Despite play likely predating storytelling, stories have achieved greater artistic heights. Games excel at mastery-related emotions, but struggle with deeper feelings. Planetfall's emotional moment, Floyd's sacrifice, happens outside player control, delivering its punch through narrative rather than gameplay. The most powerful games integrate systems and stories so gameplay itself communicates meaning. Papers, Please makes players feel moral weight through mechanics. Undertale's combat system carries narrative significance. These examples show how aligning gameplay with thematic goals creates experiences leveraging interactive systems' unique strengths. We're hardwired to destroy our own enjoyment. Once we grasp a game's pattern, we instinctively seek the optimal path, the most efficient route to victory. This isn't laziness, it's survival instinct. Cheating represents natural lateral thinking. Players distinguish between cheating and exploiting loopholes, with experts finding rule inconsistencies for advantages. We crave predictability over tedium, confining unpredictability to safe spaces, like games, where new patterns create fun learning without real-world risks. Players naturally make games more predictable to increase winning chances. Bottom feeding, repeatedly defeating weaker opponents, or grinding easy levels are rational strategies. This reveals a fundamental truth. Games are destined to become boring. Fun is the process, routine is the destination. This creates paradoxical tension. Designers expand possibility spaces while players instinctively reduce them. Game designers face a perpetual Red Queen's race. Challenges are meant to be conquered. Many respond by cramming complexity into games, yet classics endure to elegant simplicity. Checkers has just two mechanics, capture all pieces and move one piece. The lesson? Depth doesn't require complexity. It requires thoughtful design, creating emergent possibilities from simple rules. Game design faces the complexity spiral. Genres accumulate mechanics until steep learning curves discourage newcomers. Fighting games and MMORPGs demand years to master, while modern strategy games overwhelm casual players. Yet, Wii Sports and Among Us prove accessible simplicity still captivates. True innovation requires new ludemes, basic building blocks of play, rather than surface improvements. While graphics and narrative have advanced remarkably, core gameplay innovation lags behind. Tetris and chess prove minimal aesthetics remain compelling when the core loop engages. Today's groundbreaking designers look beyond gaming for inspiration. Studios like That Game Company and Playdead draw from architecture, dance, and visual art, breaking the self-referential cycle that traps designers in creative echo chambers. Games have joined other endeavors as recognized art. The argument that games cannot be art because they're just entertainment ignores that most music, novels, and films primarily entertain. Entertainment becomes art when its communication is novel or exceptionally well-crafted, something games uniquely achieve through altered perception and interactive experience. For games to reach their potential, designers must see themselves as artists wielding powerful tools. Games must illuminate aspects of ourselves we don't fully understand and present problems with no single solution. They should be thought-provoking, offer different experiences with each engagement, and immerse players enough to change worldviews. Games offer something profound, proof that challenges can be overcome, that learning is possible, that mastery is achievable. The question isn't whether games matter, it's what we'll create with this powerful medium. Will we teach conquest and control, or empathy, cooperation, and complex skills our interconnected world desperately needs?